Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast, Midweek Destinations and Versions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on The Dad Show, I'll be talking with Eric Anderson about his family's California adventure last summer. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Thanks very much, Aaron.
So this time we're talking to you about really a completely different kind of trip. This was your trip you took last summer and sort of your family's own little California adventure.
Yeah, we took a West Coast swing with the family. My wife has family out there. Her sister lives in the San Francisco area and has two daughters. And we have two daughters, so we're going to get all of them together for a fun time up in Northern California, and then head down the coast to a little place in Anaheim you may have heard of. It's Disney something. Disneyland, that's it.
That's it, yeah, Disneyland.
That's right. It's hard to keep those guys straight. So this was back in the summer, basically at the end of June. We flew out to San Francisco and spent a few days up there. Nothing really too Disney specific, except we did take a trip to the Disney Family Museum, which is on the grounds of what used to be the Presidio.
Okay.
Out in San Francisco. It turns out we weren't sure how it was going to be for the girls. They were 6 and 8 at the time.
Right.
But they really enjoyed it. There's some hands-on stuff out there. There are a lot of things that are, of course, more appropriate for people who have been Disney geeks for a while. But the girls were never bored there. They were entertained looking at some of the interactive exhibits. So we got to play around, get their hands on a few things.
Well, so let's talk about a few of those. What were some of the things that they really enjoyed about the museum that were more of the kind of hands-on type experiences?
There was a soundboard that they were able to sort of synchronize sounds to animation. And I think they would have probably played with that for a couple hours. just in terms of the some of the exhibits there, they've got what I think is a really neat thing. The Oscars for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is right. a big Oscar, and then seven little tiny Oscars, which
right,
they also because, got a big kick out of. So.
Right, because that's from an era when there wasn't a category for animated feature films because they didn't exist until Snow White.
Yeah, curious that. And there's also a film in there kind of about the history or Walt's history. And, they have some of the Mary Blair paintings in there.
Right.
Which are really, really nice to see. And those were all, I think, the whole family enjoyed seeing that because we were able to kind of relate the Mary Blair stuff back to stuff that they'd seen, say, at the Contemporary
sure.
Resort in the big mural there. So So, all in all, I think there's stuff there for everybody.
What I was going to ask. We know the things that stood out for your daughters. Was there anything that you found that was, you know, the thing that was most compelling to you as a big Disney geek fan, getting a chance to check out the Walt Disney Family Museum?
Yeah, I thought the huge cabinet full of Academy Awards was really striking to me, and just like how much praise was lauded upon Walt Disney back in that era for everything that he did and everything that his studios did. I mean, it was really it really brought it home, I think, just how big a deal it was. I mean, if you can think about somebody these days collecting that many Oscars and other Academy Awards, it's tough to think of one person amassing that sort of portfolio.
Well, yeah, it's particularly impressive considering that the only categories that he could really win in were basically technical merit type categories, because there weren't categories in which his films qualified in the sort of traditional categories, the best actor or best screenplay. I mean, those weren't options.
Right. But yeah, I mean, he really did invent sort of a new way of filmmaking, and just to see that how sort of revolutionary that was, and was really striking to me. And then just a lot of the history there that is chronicled throughout the exhibits is it tells a great story, which is what you expect from anything that has the Disney name on it.
Sure. Okay, so you also had some great, family time there in San Francisco, and then it was time to, start heading down the coast. How did you do that? How did you travel between San Francisco and Southern California? Because, it's not like traveling from north to south in say, Rhode Island or something. I mean, it's a different game going north to south in California.
A little bit, yeah. So we rented a car for our trip, and we'd done that anyway, just because we needed to get around and around San Francisco. And we kept the car and drove down the Pacific Coast Highway. So there are ways to get there faster than going along the ocean right there. But but this is a really interesting route, and as long as you don't mind being that close to sheer drop-offs into the ocean, then I think it's a great trip. We got up really early on our last morning in Northern California, and got on the road. We had breakfast, and then basically we're on the road all day long.
How did the girls do with the long car trip?
They were fine. It was really interesting landscape out there. We did take fairly regular breaks. One of their favorites was a little beach off the side of the road where elephant seals congregate. So we pulled off there, and they got to see these just enormous seals basking in the sun.
And, oh, very cool.
And this was kind of after we'd been, in the fog in the morning. So, just to be out in the sunlight was nice too.
Right. Right.
We stopped for lunch somewhere else. And, like I said, it's not a short trip. You're not going fast, around the curvy mountain roads up at the top of the route. Eventually it gets going a little faster, but I was talking to a guy who came down from the same area when we finally got to Disneyland, and he was like, "Yeah, we were down in about 5 hours,"
and you grumbled, and it took you closer to
a small bit, but if you've not been out to the coast and seen some of just the grandeur of the coast out there, it's really incredible, and it's something I'm really glad we did.
Sure.
Despite the time it took, and despite the fact that we could have been there a lot faster, I wouldn't have appreciated the trip as much if we had not done that. So
okay.
It's one of those things that, you know, if you've got the time and you've got good travelers with you, it's probably worth doing, especially if this isn't a place you're going to visit very often.
Sure.
This is, I don't know when we're going to get out there with the kids again, but this was their first trip as, you know, sort of sentient beings out there. and it, you know, it, I think it was worth it to show them
sure.
that landscape. And
right.
So anyway, eventually we made it down to Southern California. We stopped off in Santa Monica for the night. And Santa Monica has this kind of somewhat cheesy pier, and okay. which has a bunch of carnival rides on it.
Right, sort of the classic boardwalk type area. Yeah,
exactly. So we stopped over, stayed at a hotel right across from the pier that night, and went out, had a good time, you know, rode all the silly carnival rides, got, you know, disgusting carnival food, and, you know, and then, you know, headed back to the hotel and woke up early the next morning and sort of crossed town over to Anaheim the next day.
Okay, cool. So where were you staying at Disneyland?
Well, we had wanted to stay on DVC points at the Grand Californian. However, that is virtually impossible to do unless you own points at the Grand Californian for, you know, around 4th of July week.
Yeah, popular time of travel and a relatively small DVC resort.
Yeah, it's there are not a lot of DVC rooms available, unlike in Florida. And, you know, eventually they might rectify that, but it's, you know, at this point, it's, unless you own there, it's really tough. It's a really tough get. But so we ended up staying at the Candy Cane Inn, which is sort of right down the street from the Disneyland entrance, and it's one of the closer hotels. It's one of the good neighbor hotels, and it came very highly rated by people who we knew and trusted okay. about this sort of thing.
And was that trust well founded?
Yeah, I think that you know they run a shuttle up to the parks, which is great. You know, it is nowhere near as convenient as being in the Grand Californian, but few things are, since, you know, you're kind of right next to Downtown Disney and have your own entrance to
right.
a California Adventure if you're in the Grand Californian. It wasn't far to walk, but it was a lot farther to walk than coming from one of the Disney hotels.
Okay.
So we did do a lot of walking, and one time we forgot our tickets, and I had to run back and grab them. But that was not too onerous. I mean, it's not like you're staying off site at Walt Disney World. I mean, the hotel is really close.
Right. It's not like you were, you know, 5 miles away.
Exactly. There are tons of hotels around. This one in particular has a, it's sort of a longstanding reputation for being a good place to stay at Disneyland. And I think it's pretty well founded. It's not staying in a Disney hotel. And, you know, many times, like at the end of the day, we were kind of sad about not being at one of the Disney hotels. But, you know, it's cheaper if you're paying cash. And like I said, it's pretty darn close, and they do have that shuttle service, so you don't have to walk it if you don't want to.
Right. Yeah, that end of the day when you're really tired, you know, it is at least an option to take the shuttle back.
Yeah, I mean, you walk out of Disneyland or California Adventure, and you like look wistfully at the Grand Californian. Just want to maybe curl up in a big chair in the lobby there, but they apparently frown on that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So how many days did you get to spend in the parks there at Disneyland?
That was let's see, about 5 days. I think that's right.
Okay. Rather than kind of trying to take things day by day, I want to maybe address each of the parks one at a time and kind of talk about some highlights in each one. So let's start in the Grand Daddy, start in Disneyland, and.
Sure.
what maybe, first of all, going in, were some things that were at the top of your must-do list, some things that you were really, in particular, either you or the girls, looking forward to doing?
Well, I was really looking forward to showing them where it all started, first of all, and kind of explaining some of the history to them. And they would, you know, make the eye-rolling faces and the snoring noises and stuff like that. But, well, one of the big things was to take them on Space Mountain, because I think Space Mountain out in California is a lot more accessible than the Space Mountain in Florida. And I'm not talking about accessible in terms of, you know, getting in, although it is kind of easier to get into the cars in California. But it's, you know, you can sit sit beside a kid. So
right, my it's wife a little less intimidating.
Both, yeah, my wife and I could both sit next to a kid, and this was a pretty high-power roller coaster for the kids. So we're really looking forward to that. We're looking forward to taking them through the It's a Small World out there and showing them that, just because it is much grander in sort of its presentation.
Right,
out there.
Right. Well, on the building. I mean, it's a more impressive facade.
Exactly. Exactly. It's, you know, it makes the one in Florida look like kind of more of a strip mall version.
Right.
And this is a big freestanding structure, and it's really impressive. And I think aside from that, it was sort of comparing some of the rides out in California with the ones in Florida. So, you know, all the things like Pirates and some of the things that were in California Adventure, like Tower of Terror.
Right.
But you know, in Disneyland, we did want to make those comparisons.
And anything in particular that really stood out about the Disneyland experience itself?
Well, I think the Space Mountain was great. The girls loved it. Our first time through, so this is the first time that the girls were riding Space Mountain ever. We go all the way through, and we're just kind of, you know, kind of tense, waiting to see how they reacted to it, because they had been doing a bit of screaming, but it was apparently good nature, because they were like, "Yes, that was awesome," and that was great, because they sent us around again. So this is the first time it's ever happened to me on a roller coaster at any Disney park, is they just, you know, sent the same car with the same people on through again. So
oh, nice.
That was a pretty magical moment for that day.
Sure.
And you know, I was so thankful that the girls enjoyed it that much, so that they could actually, you know, enjoy that sort of thing. I mean, we went back and rode Space Mountain probably 7 times over the course of the trip. It was really great for them. We, you know, sort of had to arrange things out every time, because our younger daughter kept not showing up in the pictures because she's not vertically gifted enough to be in the pictures. But we finally got some pictures with her kind of front and center and grinning her head off. So that was really good. I also wanted to, you know, remark on the Fantasmic that's out there.
Right.
I've not actually done the Fantasmic at Walt Disney World, but I was very impressed with the Fantasmic in Disneyland. And,
well, now let me ask you this, because I'm intrigued. You were impressed with the Fantasmic show there, and I was going to ask all along, you know, what were the crowds like, and how did they impact things like the experience of, you know, watching Fantasmic? Because you're talking about, you know, leading up into 4th of July weekend there, it had to be pretty crazy busy.
Well, yeah, it was just after 4th of July by the time we got down there. But, but yeah, the crowds were, you know, not crushing, but they were definitely there. And for Fantasmic, we actually booked the dessert thing.
Ah,
so
okay.
you get seats and you get dessert, which is a nice spread. It was really a lot of food. It is kind of pricey. It's like, you know, $60 a person for the adults, and probably about half that for the kids. But you get a seat, you get a great viewing location, you get fed. The cast members there just, you know, they will keep bringing you drinks as long as you want them to bring you drinks, which was great. And I thought that was actually worth it. I was kind of skeptical going in, but you know, my wife had talked to me about, well, you know, this gives us a place to sit, and you know, the girls will be able to see things again with the vertically challenged,
right,
with a 6-year old. But you know, it turned out to be really worth it. I thought I was really impressed with the service there, the location there, and the show. It's a lot of fun. The girls enjoyed it, and we got to sit there in the same seats and watch the fireworks.
Oh, nice!
After that, so that's a nice
kind of bonus,
sort of hidden benefit of that is they'll let you know that you can just hang out and watch the fireworks from a nice. Okay. Cushy place.
So that's the Disneyland piece. Let's talk about across the Esplanade there at California Adventure. And I'm particularly, again, interested in how you kind of navigated the crowd at California Adventure with, you know, what we hear about the kind of crush of traffic in the Cars Land area when it's not, you know, the height of summer travel season. So how'd that go, and how did you find the best ways to kind of manage it?
I think the biggest thing was just, you know, get a fast pass for Radiator Springs. You know, that's really the thing to do. And then once you've got that done, everything else is not that big a deal, really. We're able to, head over to. We had multiple days in the park too,
right,
which helped, and that allowed us to, hit different things at different times. We definitely knew that Radiator Springs was on our must do list. And again, we wanted to show them the difference between the Toy Story Midway Mania in Florida and in California.
Right.
And same thing with Tower of Terror. So those were some things that we wanted to prioritize, as well as something that turned out to be really fantastic for the girls. And they probably liked it more than they liked a lot of other things, which was the Wilderness Explorers area, which is beside the Grizzly Peak water ride. It's a really neat area. They've got a bunch of stuff for kids.
This is the challenge trail, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And that wasn't that crowded ever, but it's got, you know, big walkways up in the air. It's got a bunch of little skill challenges. And like I said, I think the girls would have stayed there for quite a while too. And it let them burn off a lot of energy. It let us, have one adult with the kids. You know, basically you can just plant yourself at the entrance and exit and they can go off and and have a good time. And, you know, the other adult could, you know, go to the bathroom or, you know, go get snacks or, go over to California Screaming. And that was basically, you know, every time my wife or I had the kids on our own, then the other one would go over and get in the single rider line for California Screaming. And
that's a nice way to handle that.
Yeah, it was. It's like my wife goes, oh, yeah, I'll take the girls to the bathroom. And I'm, you know, in the single rider line for California Screaming at a dead run. So The girls weren't quite ready for California Screaming, but
I got to ask: Did you get everybody on Mickey's Grand Wheel of Death?
I choose not to be on the Wheel of Death. I don't have a fear of heights. I mean, I've done plenty of high things in my life. I've done face first rappelling down the side of a stadium, but this the Wheel of Death just is not my cup of tea. So they went to do that. I went to go ride California Screaming some more, and everybody was pretty happy with that arrangement. So and plus then the girls don't see me crying and clawing at the sides of the thing like a crazy person. So
yeah, it does. that tends to be a bit of a blow to the dad ego, and the dad cred suffers in that exchange.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, But yeah, so but they did enjoy that. I mean, we hit basically all the rides there. Like I said, the girls weren't big enough for California Screamin', but my wife and I certainly enjoyed, like I said, having the multiple rides. The single rider line for that is really fantastic. I mean, I never waited more than a couple minutes.
Yeah, and that's and this is the week after 4th of July, so.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there were still, you know, fairly large lines, but nothing crushing. And if you go in the single rider, then it all goes really, really quickly.
That's good to know.
I was very impressed with that.
Well, if you were going to give, you know, somebody who's listening to this some advice about, you know, ways to get the most out of a Disneyland trip, particularly when they're traveling during a busier season, you know, what's some advice you might give them for, you know, ways to make a trip during that time period, you know, go as trouble-free as possible?
You have to think about how you're going to structure your trip, and don't try to do everything in one day. If you're going to be there in each park for multiple days, let's say carve it up. You know, there are going to be, you know, high traffic attractions in different places in the park. So if you're trying to get fast passes early, or just get on early in a standby line, just kind of be strategic about it. So, you know, you're going over to you know, Space Mountain one day, and you're going over to, you know, some other attraction another day, just to make sure you're on it and get it out of the way.
So in some ways, it sounds to me like what you're suggesting is that, you know, even though there are only two physical parks at Disneyland Resort, that it's almost useful to think of them as, you know, similar to the way you would think of four parks at Walt Disney World. Like, you know, you wouldn't expect to be able to knock out everything in Magic Kingdom and Epcot in the same day, much the same way that you shouldn't expect to knock out everything on, you know, both sides of Disneyland in the same day.
Right. And even within California Adventure, I mean, you've got Soarin', which is at, you know, one end of things. You've got things like Toy Story and California Screamin', which are on the other end of things. And you got Radiator Springs Racers, which is in another, you know, distinct neighborhood of the park. And, you know, trying to get all that to work without, you know, some really, you know, good strategy, if it's a crowded time, it is just going to drive you crazy. So, yeah, definitely. If you can divide up the parks into you know, the neighborhoods of the attractions that you want, and just prioritize one a day, it'll help.
What are some other tips for taking advantage of, you know, ways to manage the crowd, I guess, is the way that I would put it?
Well, one of the big ticket items out there is the World of Color show in California Adventure, which is still drawing huge crowds, and, you know, especially crowded times of the year, it's going to be even more of a challenge. You can get fast passes for it over in the Grizzly Peak area. But you can also get a lunch or dinner package that gets you reserved World of Color standing space, not seats, but standing space in a good area. And we did that at Carthay Circle, which I wanted to try out anyway. We booked a lunch there and got our World of Color tickets, and were able to, you know, just kind of stroll up, you know, just before things started, and have a great viewing location. So that gets you, you know, a meal and a nice spot to watch World of Color. So if that's something you want to do one night, then my suggestion is to book one of those.
And the nice thing about that package is, you know, it's not cheap, but then the meal is what you're paying for. You're not paying extra for it being the World of Color package. It's just that the meal is fairly expensive. if you're going to enjoy the meal anyway, you might as well enjoy the World of Color package and get that, you know, priority seating or priority standing as well.
Right, right. Yeah. It's a little like the, you know, Tusker House used to do this thing where you can get priority seating for the Finding Nemo musical if you booked a lunch there between a certain time. And, you know, you're paying, you know, basically the same amount for food, but it gives you a little kicker on top of it,
right?
Which is basically what these packages are. Like you were saying, the expenditures for the food, and they've got some good food there. So I thought the Carthay Circle package was well worth it.
Well, you know, actually, while we're on there, I'm going to veer aside a little bit from our kind of tips that we were getting to, just because I realize I've neglected to ask, you know, that important question, right? So what about the food? You were in Disneyland and in the area for about 5 days there. So what stood out in terms of your food options at Disneyland?
Well, we ended up eating more sort of sit-down meals than we'd anticipated. But some of the things that worked well, we did a Storyteller's Cafe breakfast, which is right there in the Grand Californian. It gets you the breakfast buffet there, and you get a bunch of animal characters that come by, which, you know, if your kids are animal fans, then not Animal the Muppet, but, you know, animal characters, they'll enjoy that. So you get, you know, various critters that come by and say hi. And it's a little less regimented than the character meals on the East Coast. Those can be, you know, sort of, a death march of princesses or something through, but out there they do a little more sort of, you know, interactive play with people, and they'll just, you know, kind of not do the strict, you know, table by table thing. They'll, you know, see somebody come by and do something silly with them. It's a little looser, I guess. But that was a good thing, and it puts you really close to the California Adventure, especially if you're making a day there.
And that's one of those times where you can take advantage of that back door into California Adventure, even though you're not staying at the Grand California.
Right, right. And that's a great tip. That entrance there puts you in a great spot to hit some of the big ticket attractions, like, you know, Soarin' Over California, for instance. Let's see. Another, like I said, I really like the Carthay Circle lunch. They have an interesting menu. This is my first time eating there, and I thought it was really great. They are a very classy, you know, establishment, in sort of the same way that the Hollywood Brown Derby is in Florida. It's kind of got that feel of being fancy while still being in a park. So you're not expected to dress up, but, you know, you can just walk in and what you're wearing to the park, and but it still gives you that little you know classy touch. And I guess one of the other fun things was actually going to Steakhouse 55 with the girls, who are you know, one of whom is a dedicated carnivore, and she will eat a steak. There's no doubt about that. But it was really surprisingly nice for kids, I thought. It's, you know, obviously it's, you know, it can be a good, you know, place for adults if they just want to, you know, go do meat and potatoes things, you know, have a bottle of wine or whatever. But I thought it worked out really well with a couple of, you know, fairly young kids. We got a good kids menu there, and everybody was able to get some great food. So I think we hit some really good restaurants. You know, we also hit Napa Rose with the girls too, which was great. That's their really, you know, top of the line restaurant there. Did a breakfast over at the PCH Grill over in
Paradise Pier.
Paradise Pier. Pier. Yeah. Thanks. I always forget the name of that one. But yeah, that was fun, and it was kind of a nice theme there with Stitch, and you know, you get these characters that are, you know, come from different worlds, so to speak. But
right.
I feel like there was like a goofy, like a surfer goofy guy, and Stitch, and it just like I said, it's a little bit looser, it's a little less regimented out
there. Yeah, that's one of the things that I think is people have talked about a lot when we talked about the California parks, is that you don't get the sort of segregation of characters into their own stories the same way you do in Disney World, and that the atmosphere seems to be more like, well, you know, Disneyland is home for them, so they're all just kind of hanging out.
Right. But yeah, I think we avoided some places that I knew I didn't like, and when we were out there before, like you know, Blue Bayou was not good. when I was out there with my wife, right. You know, a couple of years before. In addition to being, you know, the darkest place ever, you know, it was not somewhere we wanted to return to. So we were able to skip that. Wine Country Trattoria over in California Adventure was another sit-down place we had before, and we've been to since too. But it just wasn't the right thing for the girls. So we kind of knew that wasn't the best fit. So
right,
you know, having done a little recon in advance, we're able to kind of avoid, I think, some places that wouldn't have worked out as well for us.
So let me ask you this, connecting it back to our discussion about managing and dealing with the crowds. You said you ended up doing more table service, sit-down type meals than you had expected. Had you booked these all, you know, 60 days out like Disneyland allows, or were you finding good availability, you know, closer to trip time?
Oh, we're finding it pretty close to trip time. I did do a few things early, like actually the Fantasmic dessert party was something I booked pretty early. But other than that, you know, it was and the Carthay Circle lunch as well, just to sort of have those on the book somewhere so we could, you know, plan our evenings,
right.
More or less. So, yeah, those were made pretty far out. But, you know, other than that, we were able to get, you know, like Napa Rose, you know, a day before.
Just imagine trying to get, you know, California Grill 48 hours in advance the week after 4th of July in Disney World.
Yeah, it would be a daunting task, yes. But, and, you know, everything else was pretty easy to get. I mean, there wasn't, you know, thinking back on it, it was mostly just, you know, figuring out what day would work best for us, just
sure,
in terms of our overall trip, rather than trying to fit in or trying to arrange things around a reservation. So it's like, well, we want to be in this park on this day, this park on this day. Let's do the, you know, Carthay Circle lunch on, you know, on Monday, and then do the Fantasmic dinner package on the previous Saturday. And, just because that would fit in better with the flow of the trip.
Right.
So, yeah, instead of building around the ADRs like we've done a lot at Disney World, it was really, it was more of a just pick a day and get it done.
Okay, great. All right, well, if you had to look back and say, you know, this is maybe one or two things that if we had it to do over, we would do differently, what would those be?
That's a tough one, actually. everything went really well. I think that maybe I would have tried to spend a little more time in Trader Sam's. I went over there to have a drink and grab the souvenir glass for one of the other Diz Dads, and you know, I was able to sneak off and do that, but. You know, it was a place I would have liked to explore a little bit more.
Just so people are tracking with us, Trader Sam's is the relatively new bar in the Disneyland Hotel.
That's correct. It's just outside, kind of by the pool, but there's a kind of cool, funky interior, seating area that's a lot of fun. They got really interesting drinks and fairly strong. So, keep that in mind. But they do sell these kind of grotesque, themed souvenir glasses, which are really cool. Okay. So I think, doing that would have been nice. I mean, even though it's, everything is so close there that it's not a tremendous hardship, but, staying inside one of the Disney hotels, like every time we walked into the Grand Californian for, breakfast or dinner or, just to kind of go in and sit down for a little bit, it was just, wouldn't it be great if we were staying here and we would, be able to go back to our room and do something.
Right.
It's just such a great location there with everything just kind of right on top of it. We were kind of, wistful about, having that, that possibility. So,
right.
I think, even though everything is so close, there is still a benefit to staying in one of the Disney hotels there.
Okay.
I think that's the other big one.
And then I guess one of the last things I wanted to talk to you about was just sort of big picture wise, for somebody who was contemplating doing this kind of a California swing trip, what are some maybe things, outside of Disneyland that you would advise people to really not miss if they're going to take a West Coast trip like this that, is the kind of thing that's not likely to get repeated for a long period of time?
Well, I think the swing down the coast, like I said, even though it takes a while, there is just some really incredible, vistas out there looking out over the ocean that are just incredible. And it's a whole different thing than if you've been on the East Coast and been along the coast there. It is so different and really beautiful. I think that is just an incredible thing to see. And if you're not going to make it out there again, for a while at least, I think it's worth doing. Other than that, up in the San Francisco area, there's a lot of great things. If you're a Disney geek, like I said, the Disney Family Museum is awesome. And it's in a really beautiful section of the city. Like I said, it's on the former Presidio Naval Base area, but it's just incredible. It's just beautiful. If you're a wine person, there are plenty of places to go in California to visit some really good wineries. So, if you're up in the San Francisco area and you want to get, sort of head north into Napa Valley, that's a good thing. It's funny because on the day that we traveled up to Napa Valley, we ended up, I think it was like 50 degrees when we started, in around San Francisco. And then by the time we were coming back sort of inland, it was 105 degrees. So
oh, wow.
Just in that area with the various microclimates, it's, that's kind of a weird thing if you want to experience it. Like they were having a bit of a heat wave when we were out there anyway, but all my San Francisco friends were, saying how wonderful the weather is and how it never gets super hot out there. And then
until you came there,
I was taking pictures of the car thermostat or the car thermometer and saying, look what you did. Look what you did to us. What is this? Liars. But yeah, so I mean, there's plenty of stuff all over California that that is worth seeing, and I think it bears doing some study. If you want to go up into up north of San Francisco to go into like Muir Woods, see the big trees, you can do that. We tried, but we were foiled because there was nowhere to park within like 2 miles of the entrance to the to the park. And
yeah, rough timing there.
Yeah, that was not fun. And, we had kids with us, so didn't want to, frog march kids through, a mile and a half to get to the entrance, even though I'm sure it would have been wonderful. We, you know, could also just, you know, drive back down into San Francisco, take them to the Ghirardelli shop, and well, they would be pretty happy with the day's events.
And to be fair, you know, the challenge is that you're going to hike, you know, 2.5 miles to the entrance of Muir Woods, and then the whole purpose of being there is to go kind of hike among the trees. So to take a hike in order to take your hike, that's kind of asking a lot of the younger kid.
Yes, or, you know, putting, you know, I don't know how many of them would have actually fit on my shoulders, but I'm sure they would have tried to, you know, make me carry them through. But yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. It's a lot of different, areas, really. So Northern California is different from the Central Coast, is different from the LA area. They each have their own attractions. You've got, you know, driving down the coast, you can, you know, look out on one side of the car, you've got the ocean. On the other side of the car, you've got, you know, mountains rising up, you know, just a couple of miles away. So there's, you know, a lot of, if you're into hiking, you can get out and go up into the mountains if you want to, or, you know, through the woods. But, you know, for us, I think it was a lot just, you know, first of all, visiting family, which we got to do, seeing some of the varied geography out there, which was really aided by that trip down the Pacific Coast Highway. And then, of course, you know, hitting the place from whence all the stuff sprang,
right,
in Disneyland. So, you know, it was, you know, that sort of trip doesn't, you know, it's not something that's going to happen a lot for us. It's a long trip. It was a long trip. We're traveling a lot during the trip. So, you know, it's not just we fly out somewhere, do stuff there, and then fly back. There was, you know, a whole day's worth of driving in there too. So, you know, it can eat up some time, but there's also a lot to see along the way. And that really worked for us.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing the trip with us, Eric.
Sure. No problem. Thanks for allowing me to.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to talking to you again the next time.
All right. Thanks.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.